Hello and welcome to another episode of the Board Game Shenanigans Podcast, where we review the games we've been playing and discuss board game related topics. My name is Bob.
And I'm Natasha.
All right. In this week's episode, we are going to be wrapping up our top 100 games of all time. We're doing 10 through 1 in this particular episode.
Favorites. Absolute favorites.
The top echelon, the cream of the crop, the games of games. We do have an announcement, I guess, to make. It's somewhat bittersweet. So we've been doing this podcast for a little over 2 years now. And long story short, we're taking a break. Whether that means the podcast is officially ending, I can't actually say that for sure. But as of right now, I think just based on the schedule that we've done and a variety of other things, including, you know, just life as life is, we are taking a break. And if it's 6 months and we feel like we want to get back into it, we'll get back into it. Otherwise, yeah. It's been an interesting, cool journey throughout this process. When we both started, I don't think either one of us really knew what to do. Mm-hmm. I know, like, for example, I do, you know, the editing for the podcast, and that's a skill set I never had. So that's something I just had to learn how to do. But so it's been fun. We've met some really cool people. It's been a super positive experience. It's not anything necessarily negative that we're leaving, but we evaluated it and we just kind of think it's going to be good for a break.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we pick it back up. It's been a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work. And yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it's been a cool journey. We've met some really cool people. It's given us avenues for a lot of different things. It's been very positive. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback. We've gotten a negative review, and we're not necessarily going to be, you know, good for everybody. You know, we are millennials. It's just the way it is. Anyway, let's just get into the episode. Let's do our top 10 games, our favorite of the favorites, the best of the best. Let's do this. What do you got, Natasha? What's your number 10?
All right, my number 10 is definitely not on Bob's list at all, and that is The Search for Lost Species. So
How is this your 10?
I love it so much. I love The Search for Planet X, but I like The Lost Species. Like, The Search for Planet X would be on my list, but I've kind of combined them together because they're essentially the same game. And The Search for the Lost Species is just slightly better. I like the way I like the hexes of the board a little bit better. There's a little bit more that they have. So that's why I like this one a little bit better. People I play, like, this is very polarizing. Like, if you like deduction, you will like this game. If you do not like deduction, you will not like this game. I have played it with people who did not like it at all. And I don't think, you know, obviously, Bob, you're not going to like it.
Yeah, but, man,
it is such a good deduction game. It's my favorite deduction game, actually. Because I like that there's all these rules about, like, okay, if this animal is here, then these animals can be here or can't be here. And similar to The Search for Planet X with the planets, I just love that you start off at the beginning of the game not knowing things and you're getting this information and it's, like, not helpful at all. Like, it's like comets could be across from meteorites or something like that. And you're like, well, I don't know where any of the comets or the meteorites are, so this isn't helpful. But then as you start learning things, you're like, okay, well, then that means this, and then that means this, and then all of a sudden you have a decent amount of information, and you take a minute, and you're like, wait a minute, I think I know where everything is, and you figure it all out, and it all comes together in this nice puzzle. I like this game because it doesn't end when somebody figures it out. You know, it gets close, but everyone's got another turn, and you can still win the game even if you don't find the lost species or Planet X. You can win by getting points and making good guesses and finding other things. So I really like this game. I think it's a really solid, great deduction game. My number 10. Highly recommend The Search for Lost Species.
What is there a major difference between Lost Species and Lost Planet? Or is it basically like the same game?
It's nearly identical, same game, different theme. But in the planets, you're exploring space. So you go around this like rondelle type thing, like a circle that it's only available, like, depending on where the satellites are pointing. You can only see certain parts of the sky. Where the Lost Species is a map, and you're moving your character along hexes on the board, and you're limited by where you are on the board.
So,
like, you can go wherever you want, where, like, the telescope goes to the same place for everybody else.
The only reason why I would potentially think about playing this game is knowing that I don't actually have to solve it in order to actually win. But even then, I don't know if I would
You have to solve, you have to get like, you have to either make really good guesses, get lucky with your guesses, or you have to solve, like, you have to find other things. You know, even if you're not finding the lost species, you have to find like other things in order to get points. So I don't think that you'll like it because of that.
Yeah, and for that reason, I am out.
I don't think you'll like this game because it's very, like, the first, like, three or four turns, you get information, but yet you know nothing. We're like a regular game, like, you can start crossing things out, like, think of, like, Awkward Guess or, like, their Clue style, where you get information, now you're crossing things out, and then at the end of the game, you're basically, you figure it out when you've crossed everything out. It's not like that. It's telling you, like, things like this is next to these two things, you know, or this is across from this, or none of these are next to any of these. And so you start off with all these clues, but you don't know anything. Like, so they're not helpful. And then once you know something, then all of a sudden these clues, okay, now I got these clues like that I've written down. I can go back and like, okay, since I know this, and then other these things will make sense to me. And then,
sure.
Then that's when things start piecing together. So I don't think you're going to like it.
Yeah, I think I'm good. okay, so I'm going to go to a number 10 that I think is actually good, and that is Scythe. This is a Jamie Stegmaier game. It was my number 2, I believe, last year. It's dropped to 10. Nobody wants to play it with us because we're just so good at the game. Hearty har har. That's the thing. Natasha and I have played this game enough that I think new players, it's going to be difficult to be competitive. Just because we understand how the game ebbs and flows. But this game, it's almost at that point now where people are cool with hating on it. You know, it's one of those like hipster things. It's so popular that people are like, whatever, this game's stupid.
But, well, a lot of people said that early on because they had like, they thought it was going to be a different type of game than what it was. So there was a lot of that early too.
Yeah, it has mechs, and they talked about combat, but it's not like a combat-focused game. This game is all about like resource production and trying to achieve objectives as quickly as you possibly can. You're trying to formulate a plan in which you can take double actions on your turn. So in this game, you have a board, and on that board, it you're going to have a starting location, you're going to have workers, and you're going to eventually have mechs. And ultimately, you're producing resources in order to take different types of actions. And the way this works is there's going to be a top action that you can do. And if you have resources, you can perform a bottom action. And the trick is really to be able to combine both actions as frequently as you possibly can. I think the person who takes the most actions at the end of the day is going to be the person who wins this game. And ultimately, the way the game ends is you're trying to achieve objectives. For example, building all four mechs. Putting out all your workers, you know, getting certain objective cards. When you complete these, you're basically going to be putting stars out, and that's going to progress the game forward. So in a lot of ways, it's a race to get to these spots first, and or to get achieve these objectives as quickly as you can. You know, it's a race to that. But I like the action system. I like the aesthetic of the game. The artwork in this game is fantastic. It just, every time there's just so much tension, I'm always waiting for my turn so I can do my thing because I'm just trying to figure out how quickly I can, you know, achieve these different things. It's, I really, really enjoy how much I'm anticipating my next turn because I have like the next several turns planned out.
This is an efficiency puzzle, really, is what it is.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a war game. It's not. It's a heavy Euro game, and it's efficiency. It's all about maximizing your turns, you know, and to because you don't have a lot of time to get this stuff done. Yeah, it's a good game.
Yeah, solid game. And if I know anything, you're going to be talking about it towards the end of the episode. So my number 10, Scythe.
All right. My number 9 is my second favorite. I shouldn't say that. It's one of my favorite trick-taking games. And that is Skull King. And that is, this game is just so much fun for us. We have had so much fun. In fact, I think this game is really when our friendship developed, was when we played this game at our local brewery in Grand Rapids, House Rules. They have board games there. We played it and I taught it. Did a great job teaching it.
No.
We just had so much fun.
Lies.
We had so much fun. And then when Phil showed up, he showed us another way of playing the game.
the correct way. Yep.
Yep. And Bob just laid into me, teased me so much about getting the rules, teaching the rules differently than what they're, you know, written in the rule book. So, yeah. and it was just such a fun memory. And I think that's really when like our friendship like grew and blossomed because mm-hmm. of the such a great time we had playing that silly game. And every time we play it, we just have so much fun. We play it at a lot of cons, and it feels like a really wild game, like kind of all over the place. Like you have no idea what's going to happen, but there's a lot of strategy.
Yes.
And it can be like, it can be so fun when you pull it off and so heartbreaking when you don't, but fun, like if you can screw over other people. This is just such a fun game. I think it's great for all types of group of people because a lot of people understand trick taking. You don't need to be into board games to play this game, and you can really screw people over. And it's a lot of fun. Like when you end the game and somebody's got 500 points and somebody else has 100 minus 100 points, and it's still fun. Like everyone there has had fun playing the game.
Yeah, I when we played it at House Rules. Oh my God. The last thing you need to do is give me ammunition to make fun of you about something. And the funny thing is, a lot of people get mad when I like tease them about stuff. And most of the time, if I'm teasing you, it's because like I like you. And that's like my way of saying, hey, you're cool. I can tease you.
That's how I always take it. I was like, oh, Bob likes me. He wants to be friends with me. He's making fun of me.
And part of it was just, it was so good that you're brushing Phil off. Oh my God. I love it. Every time I play that game, I think about that time. So good. So good.
It was so worth it. So worth it because of the memories we have from that game. That is my number 9. Highly recommend it. Small box, simple card game, Skull King. Cannot sing its praises enough.
Super cool game. Yeah, I like it quite a bit. All right, my number 9 is a heavy Euro game, and that is Gaia Project. So this game basically re-implements Terra Mystica. And what they've done in this game is they made it so Terra Mystica, if you mess up in the beginning, you could actually end up like screwing yourself over very early on because you could get pinned in a corner and not be able to expand out. So they've fixed a couple things in this particular game, but it is a space game in which you're exploring different planets. You're going to be placing mines. You're going to be placing, you know, trading posts. You're going to be upgrading these different types of buildings all to try to accumulate points. Ultimately, the way scoring works is there's going to be 2 end game kind of objectives. And it could be something as whoever has spread out the most on the board, whoever has the most hexes, whoever is, you know, colonized the most Gaia planets, that sort of thing. And you're going to be keeping track of that throughout the course of the game. And it's going to be first, second, third, that sort of scoring. But then every round, you're going to be scoring points based on doing specific things. And those are going to vary game to game to game. So, for example, you could say every time you build a mine, you will score 2 points. Every time you upgrade to a trading post, you're going to score 4 points. Every time you upgrade to a research lab, that sort of thing. So you're trying to focus on completing as those objectives round to round to round in order to gain points, but you're also trying to fulfill those end game things. And ultimately, that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to score as many points by expanding your empire, forming federations, that sort of thing. There's a lot to this game. It's a heavier Euro game, which a lot of strategic decisions. There's these power cubes that's kind of interesting that go in a cycle, and you're basically able to move them to different zones. And when you get to them to the final zone, you can actually use them to take additional actions, that sort of thing. But in order to move them, most of the time you're paying points for. So it's this trade-off. You could end up dumping 30 points into moving these cubes, and you hope that at the end of the day, it was enough to push you over. It was enough to generate more points than that sort of thing. There's a technology board in which you're going to be climbing up the different technologies. I really enjoy technologies. Once you get past a certain point, you're going to be scoring points that way too. There's a bunch of alien races that you can play. So, and the board is modular, so there's a lot of replayability within that. Yeah, I really like this game. I've been playing it a ton on Board Game Arena. I have the physical copy. I've played a handful of times. And it just, every little thing about it, I think the decision space in it is just so robust.
This game's a bit heavy for me. I feel like the fans of this game love this game.
Yeah.
This game is well loved by people who like it. And then people who don't just obviously aren't interested in it. And it's just a little too heavy. I think I could learn to love this game if I played it a bunch, but obviously that's hard to do.
I think this game would be suited way better on Board Game Arena, partly because it takes care of all the little things that you don't have to, that way you don't have to constantly manipulate stuff. You can just focus on taking your turns.
Yeah, probably.
But I really enjoy it. I think it's a really solid game. I enjoy it quite a bit. My number 9, Gaia Project.
All right. My number 8, I think, was 46 on your list, and that is Revive. And I cannot believe it was 46. Is that right?
It is right, yeah. It's 46.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. I love this game so much. This is one of my favorite newer games that came out, one of them. But, man, I just love, I don't know what it is about this game. It just clicks for me. I love the card play. I love that you're taking two actions on your turn. This game just like clicks for me. Like I just get it. And I like it so much. It's really beautiful to play. It's got nice, beautiful artwork. I don't know. It's got nice components, and it's got this fun, like, thing you're moving around on your own personal board. Like you're moving your, these three different discs along to acquire new technologies. And it kind of escalates really big. It does escalate quickly. Like it's got a really pretty steep curve there. All of a sudden it gets to the top and you're like, oh, we're done already. And I don't like when you have one last turn of the game and you might, the only thing you can do is reset or hibernate or whatever it's called. I don't like that, you know, but man, even with those two flaws, like, man, I love this game. I think it's so good. I think it's faster than what you feel like it's going to be. So I like that. It's interesting. I love the card play. I love going out on the board, kind of exploring the board. I think it's fun. It's not like there's, you know, it's not a lot of area control or anything. So I like that. I just like everything about it, I think.
I think the special powers are cool too. Each faction feels, you know, different. And I think in some ways it does the Voyages of Marco Polo, where sometimes you kind of feel jealous of somebody else's power when they start using it. And then you start using your power and they're just like, man, how are you getting away with not having to pay food for like distance travel, that sort of thing, which is cool. I like the fact that you can be somewhat envious of another player's, you know, special power, that sort of thing. There's a lot of different avenues to explore in this game too. I do agree though, that is my number one thing, is I do not want to play it at 4. I'd rather play it at 3 with all the artifacts so the game lasts just a smidge longer. That is my only complaint about it. But yes, it's a super cool game.
And then as you've got your own individual powers, and then you're able to unlock more powers. There's a lot of different paths you can go down. Like you, depending on like the objectives you have at the beginning of the game, might kind of dictate which path you're going to go down, which strategy you're taking. Yeah, there's a lot you can kind of go and run with this game. I think it's really good. I really like it. That's my number 8, Revive.
All righty. My number 8, I'm going to talk briefly about, because we'll talk about it later on, and that is Paladins of the West Kingdom. So this is my favorite Shem Phillips game. This is the second installment in the West Kingdom trilogy, coming after Architects and before Viscounts. This one just, there's so many things that are interconnected, and it's such a cool puzzle that it everything about it just clicks with my brain. And the way this game kind of works is you're going to be getting different colored workers, and those workers are able to activate different spots. So you might be able to get a green worker, a blue worker, a red worker, and a white worker. Okay, so now you put them in these different spots, and there's going to be different action spots that require very specific colored workers. But you can upgrade them and place these, you know, little buildings on them to make the action spots better. And what's cool about this game, and what always like intrigues me, is how all the different actions are interconnected. So for example, if you're going to commission, it basically you're able to take one of these little monk icons, these little monk meeples, and place them out onto the board. But it's going to be based on your faith, which is, you know, a specific number that you're going to grow. And then when you do that, you're going to get blue. I don't remember what blue is. Loyalty? I don't know. Regardless, but so you're going to move up blue by doing the black action. Then you can absolve, which is based on your influence in blue. Okay, but then what do you get out of that? You're going to get black. you know, you can fortify, which requires a certain level of blue strength, but then you're going to get red strength. So the all of the actions are intertwined by climbing up one and being high on one particular track. For example, if you're high on blue, you're going to be able to do, let's say, more red actions or more black actions, or you can acquire more red or black based on the different things that you do. So they're just all interconnected, and it's one of those cool things where you do something, you get another meeple. All right, what am I going to do with this meeple? Oh, I'm going to put it here. I'm going to get this meeple. All right, cool. Then I can, you know, it's this puzzle that you're always trying to piece together. It just, yeah, I really like this game. Like I said, it's my favorite of the Shem Phillips games. Yep. The silence says it all.
It's a really good game.
It is a really good game. So we'll talk more about it later. My number 8, the Paladins of the West Kingdom.
All right. My number 7 is Planet Unknown. This is, we've talked a lot about this game recently. It came out last year. This is a polyomino game where you are selecting polyominoes, putting them on the planet, and then moving up tracks. It is pretty simple. I've taught it to a lot of groups of people. It's gone over fairly well. And it's one of the polyomino games where you do want to fill in your entire board. So that's pretty consistent. So it doesn't have the special, like, we want to like leave open spots or strategically do things a certain way. So you do want to try to fill in your whole board. So it can be satisfying for people. But you also have other things that you want to hit. You might want these certain tiles for these icons. You might want certain tiles to fit into your board. There's a few different things you can manage. But I think what makes this game so great is the Lazy Susan, because as you're selecting your tiles, everybody else is then selecting a tile from the slot that's in front of them. And then on their turn, they're going to move it around and you're forced to select one of these two tiles. It can be fun too if you're competing for like the least amount of icons and you really need your opponent to take one of them. And then there's a spot that both of the icons are in both of them. So if you move the Lazy Susan to this spot, then they're forced to take one of those icons. That can be fun. It's definitely like doesn't feel like it's got player interaction, but I have strategically placed my Lazy Susan to force somebody to take a tile so that they have more of those tiles, because you want like certain objectives might want you to get less of certain ones or more of certain ones. Every game's going to play a little bit different based on your individual objectives that you're competing with your person adjacent to it. I really like that. I also really like how this game scales. It plays six to two, two to six, but each game plays a little different, feels a little different. So it kind of feels like a different gaming experience. You can play the basic version where everyone's powers are the same, or you can flip them over and everyone has unique planets and unique powers. I enjoy both versions and I'm happy to play just the base game even.
Yeah, this game's solid. And it's interesting because we've taught it to new people and they've picked up on it pretty well, which is almost not necessarily gateway or welcoming. I think it's welcoming gateway plus. So it's just that one little extra step above, because there's a few extra concepts within that. But yeah, and what's great about it is it feels somewhat different in each player count. Two feels very much you're in control of everything. Six feels like, all right, I just got to make do with what I have. And I need to make sure whatever I do, I leave myself open for other things, because I'm only going to get one decision every 6 rounds.
And they're both good. Like, that's what's so cool, is they're both good in their own ways.
Yeah, typically they are. It's a solid game. The only issue I have currently is I've played the heck out of it. I've played it. It was on my 10x10 last year, and it was something I actually hit. And it was, we probably played it 15 times. I played it like 15 times the physical version last year. And that doesn't count all the times I played it on Board Game Arena, because it's on there now too. My wife and I will get it out and play quite a bit. So I've started to cool a little bit. That's why I dropped to, let's say, what was it, 26-ish?
Yeah, 26.
That's why it's cooled a little bit for me, just because I've played it a ton. But still, I really enjoy this game. It's going to be a game I probably keep for a while and continue to play, because I like it so much.
Yeah, my only complaint with this game is I don't like bringing it to game night, because everything falls out of that Lazy Susan. Yeah. So I don't like it to leave my house. It's just a little too big of a box. It's awkward and everything falls out. But if I get that lid, that should help. Because this is one that I like to bring, because it scales so well. It's like, yeah, even if you have no idea who's going to show up, you can always play Planet Unknown.
Well, and it goes to 6, which is sometimes can be really important, because you get those awkward numbers in game nights sometimes. Like, yes, you can do 3 and 3, but sometimes everyone just wants to play a game together. And this is it. This does it really, really well. Yeah.
Yeah. That is my number 7, Planet Unknown.
All right. My number 7 is a game that just came out this year, and that is Great Western Trail New Zealand.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, your boy likes Great Western Trail. Mm-hmm. And it feels somewhat weird to have included all 3 versions on my top 100. Yes. But they all feel like a little different, right? They all kind of approach the same kind of concept in a slightly different way. In this, you're traveling around New Zealand. You're herding sheep. You're not herding cattle. I think what's cool about this particular board is it feels a little bit easier, I would say, than the normal Great Western Trail. I do like the shipping in this particular game. I think it's cool. But I often ask myself, is this which version do I want to play? Because I own all the versions. And as you will find out eventually, you'll know which one I like gravitate towards. But I still really enjoy this game. And I think they're just different enough that they have their own spot, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel a little bit different. I think this one, again, I don't want to say it's easy, because I don't necessarily think these games are very easy, but I do think it feels slightly better than some of the other games, some of the other versions.
I only played this once and I really did enjoy it quite a bit. I think if I played it a couple more times, I could really like learn to love it, you know?
Yep.
It's a fun game. It's really cute. I like the theme of it. I think it's interesting and colorful. I like a lot about it. I like the shipping part at the top. I enjoy playing this game.
I like it. I like all the versions. This one's a good one. I think, again, based on where it is, I think this one's better than Argentina. Argentina's still a solid game. But my number 7, Great Western Trail, New Zealand.
All right. My number 6 has been a favorite of mine for years and years and years, and that is Codenames. And I cannot get this game played all to save my life. It is still my number 6 because I've played it so much and I have so many great memories of playing it. But man, I wish people would still play it with me. The only people I can get to play it with me now are my kids. We play the 2-player version often, and that's a lot of fun. I really like it. I've got regular Code Names and I've got the 2-player version, and I've got them mixed together into one box. And so I can play either one. It doesn't really matter. You can play 2-player version with teams as well. So if you have a large group, you could play regular Code Names or you could play teams, which is great if you have people that don't feel like they're very good at giving clues. They could be on a team and they can all work together to give the clues. So you all play cooperatively. I like that version just as much. I like them all, but nobody plays it anymore in the gaming group, which is a big bummer. I have to get my friends over to play it. My friends really like it. My friends that play a lot of like our casual gamers, they like to play. They're not sick of Code Names yet.
It's interesting because I think that's one of those games that at this point you're really just going to play it with newer people. I don't know. It's still loved. Everyone still loves it. I still, mm-hmm. I still own my version, and it's usually just to bust out with people who aren't typically gamers. That's usually who I end up playing with. So it just, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that people don't want to play it. We did. Yeah. Didn't we play it at Origins last year?
We played Codenames Pictures, which wasn't near as good as regular Codenames. I don't recommend that one. And I really don't like any of the themed ones, like the Harry Potter, Disney. Do not get any of those. One, they're lower quality. I think they had to like use the expense to pay for the IP. And two, like, they're too much of the same. If you've got like 5 Disney princesses and you got to get people to guess 2 of them, like, how are you going to give a clue for that? I have one friend that's very into Disney, and he vehemently disagrees with me that Disney is the best. But if you're not super into one of those themes, then I recommend the base game, because they're just generic words that aren't related to each other. And the fun is trying to come up with ways to relate them and not relate the other words to it.
We played Code Games once, which was we took a bunch of board games and we laid them out into the same kind of grid. And yes, played it that way. That was fun. That was a fun
time,
too.
That was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
It was harder than you'd think. Because, again, they all have something in common. Like, they're all games. Like, you can't be like worker placement when there's like 5 worker placements out there. So you have to be really creative. But I love Codenames. I think it's such a great game. Highly recommend. I think it's a staple. Should probably be one of those games that's in everybody's homes. One of my favorites of all time. My number six, Codenames.
Yeah. All right. My number six favorite game of all time is my highest Uwe Rosenberg game, and that's Lahav. I really love this game. I would love to play it more, but for some reason, similar to, you know, Codenames, that sort of thing, it doesn't necessarily get played. It is kind of a big, longer game. And it's also one of those games that I think plays way better at lower player counts than higher player counts. I'd rather play it at two or three max instead of, I think it goes up to like six or something stupid.
Yeah, I've never played that. That's crazy.
I don't think I would ever want to play that. It even says, I think in the rule book, it doesn't recommend playing that until you've played it a handful of times. I really like it at lower player counts. I think Tom Vassell once talked about this game, and the thing that he loved the most about it is every time it's your turn, you always have a good decision. You're always getting something cool, right? You can get a bunch of fish, or you can get a bunch of clay, or you can get a bunch of wood, that sort of thing. And you're always weighing, like, what do I want the most of? Do I want to get the most stuff, or do I want to get something that I really need? Like, do I just take a bunch of fish instead of all the wood that's piled up? That sort of thing. It's always a very good decision. I'm not very good at the game, but I just enjoy it so much. It's just everything about it, just, again, it clicks with my brain, and it's that cool puzzle of trying to efficiently do that. And it's hard to try to make sure you're feeding your people, but still accomplishing the things you need to accomplish in order to progress and gain points. So I really enjoy this game quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I love this game as well. It just doesn't get played very often. You know, it's kind of a big, long game. You know, and we usually play with more than two. But if we play with three, I think it's a great option even.
Yeah,
it is. It does. It's always good. Like, you're going to get this, you're going to get this, especially as the game escalates. You're like, oh, I better take, you know, the beginning of the game, you're like, oh, I better take it. It's got three fish. That's really good. And then at the end, you're like, oh, it's 10 fish on there. But I don't need fish. I really need this other thing, you know?
Yeah, but it's 10 fish, right? So you don't end up
taking
it.
Yeah.
And you have the thing that converts the fish into smoke fish. So now they're more like, they are worth more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. So many. It is just like, which of the best decisions do I pick?
Yeah, it's fun. And it's fun to get good at it, to be able to accomplish a lot and just get a ton of points.
Yeah.
It's one of the games that can be really worth going into debt for too, which a lot of times you kind of avoid that. And this game, it's a good strategy, getting into some debt early on to pay for some things. And
yeah,
it's a good game.
I agree.
I like it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's my number six. So Lahav, good game, solid game. My favorite Uwe game.
All right, my number five is Altiplano. This is a bag builder, actually, where you're drawing chits from a bag, and then your action selection, where you're going to these different locations on the board. You're limited where you can go, depending on how many carts you have. And then you go to that location, you can put your chits there, and then you can do all of the actions that are available in that spot. And then you move to another spot in the game, and you activate any chips that you had put down in that location. So I really like the movement aspect of this game, where you need to be really strategic, and you want to end your turn on a spot that you are going to be able to do that action again on your next turn. So knowing what's in your bag and what you're likely to draw is really important, because ideally you want to be able to take another action since you're already there. You don't want to start your turn by moving. You're already at a location, so you want to take advantage of being at that location, because movement is tricky. Especially, I played it last time I played it, and everybody bought all the cards, and like, I didn't have any cards, so I could do one movement the entire game, or each round I could do one movement. So I really needed to take an action, go to a new spot, take an action, and then on my next turn, take an action at that same spot, and then go to another spot and take actions, so that I could always take at least two action spots at two different locations. And I really like that puzzliness of that game, specifically the movement and the drawing the chips. I like keeping a small bag, and then that way I know what's coming, and I can have an idea of what I'm going to get, and hope to get at least I can do something on that action spot.
It's interesting with this game, because obviously this came out in succession to Orleans. It was the next version of a bag building game. And I just still like Orleans better. The movement thing is cool. I think there's some interesting choices with that. But I think overall, for whatever reason, Orleans is just the game that I like better in this genre. I definitely can see this is a Natasha game. I don't know what it is. Every time, like, you get so excited when anyone brings it. You're like, I want to play that. Mm-hmm. I think when I first started coming to game night, that's like you guys played the game like 7 or 8 times in a row. It was ridiculous.
Like, yeah, it was like always every out week on the table. We were always playing Altiplano, and yeah, I loved it. I was the one like, let's play it. Yeah, it is a game that I really enjoy. I enjoy playing it over and over again. And I recently played it, I think twice, and that's what made me put it back to my top up here as high as it is, because I played it and I was like, God, I just love this game so much. It's just the right weight. Like, it's definitely like mid to heavy Euro. There's a lot of choices, a lot of decisions, a lot of things you can do. You can't do everything. You're limited based on your starting ability, what chips you even have. So you might not ever get fish, and that's fine. Like, you don't ever need to get fish. You know, there's a really interesting part about taking all your goods and putting them in storage to score points at the end of the game, you know, but you want to use those chips for as long as you can. I don't know. It all comes together in a really great package. I love this game. Fifth best game of all time is Altiplano. It's so good.
Fifth best game of all time. Okay. Uh-huh. My fifth best game of all time is, I'm going to probably talk about it very briefly because you're going to be talking about it here in a little bit, and that is The Crew Mission Deep Sea. Specifically, Deep Sea, I like the version better than the space version, just because I like those cards. I like the difficulty cards because it changes things up, and it has new requirements of what you're trying to accomplish. So I like this version the best. It's one of those games that's right up there with Skull King that we've played a ton at conventions late at night. Once we're kind of done with playing bigger games and we're going to play 5, 6, 7, 8 rounds of this, and we just keep playing it. And it's one of those games, like I said, that comes out. I grew up with trick-taking games. This takes that concept of trick-taking and turns it into, you know, cooperative trick-taking. So it makes you think slightly different, which I love. Natasha's going to talk about it here in a little bit. So
you're really,
we can just
spoiling my top 10 this week.
it's like your top 5 or my 5 through 10 or 6 through 10, I guess. I don't know. I love this game. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast, and we'll just talk about it a little bit more here in a second. So my number 5, The Crew Mission Deep Sea.
All right. My number 4, Bob brought up already. It is his number 67. And I agree with him. Orleans is the better game than Altiplano.
Yeah, I was wondering.
It is slightly better. I love them both so much, but I do agree Orleans is just a slightly better version of it, despite its ugly game. This is the ugliest of my favorite games. This is the ugliest best game ever. It's even better than
the ugliest best game ever.
Best game ever. Yeah, it's even better than Castles of Burgundy. I like it better, and it is just as ugly, although the components are nicer, so it has that going for it. But it barely. It does not have nice components. Don't be fooled. It's just better than Castles of Burgundy. But the game is just so good. I love this game. This is another bag building game. Ugly artwork, terrible theme, boring. It's literally beige. At least Altiplano is like colorful and like kind of got like a alpaca theme to it. It's cute. This one is just beige with dudes, like ugly drawn dudes.
Why do you hate Clemens Franz so much?
I hate his people. Like, I like his artwork and he does Altiplano, and I like that just fine. You know, because it's more like the colorful. I don't like these like monks and characters and I don't like the way he draws men. I don't like it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. The artwork's unique. I don't think it's that bad, but yeah.
It's horrible. And it's ugly. It's bland. It's brown. I wish they would retheme this, a new game with the same game with a new theme, like maybe New Orleans would be a cool theme, or you could do jazz music. You could do food. You could do so much with it. That'd be my idea. Anyways, I still love this game despite everything. It is so good. It is also a bag builder, and you need to be strategic about the tiles that are in your bag. You have to get rid of them. You want to get rid of them early because the spots fill up. If you can't get rid of them, if the spots are full, you can't get rid of them, and they're stuck in your bag, and you're not using them ever, which is annoying. I think this game is just brilliant. One of the best games of all time, my number 4, Orleans.
I love how you were just like, you can make it like New Orleans. So basically, you can just add new, but we can call it New Orleans.
Yeah.
And It just signifies it's a new version.
Yes. With new artwork. Fun New Orleans artwork.
Would you want the Miko to do the artwork, or do you think you'd rather have somebody else do the artwork?
Yes, he would do great artwork for a New Orleans theme. Because like New Orleans is kind of dirty and like, you know, just a lot of it's good. It'd be good. Like dirty in a good way.
Dirty in a good way.
Smells like vomit and piss. But also like, I don't know, the voodoo magic is cool. Yeah, like the music is cool. Like good food. Like there's just so much culture in New Orleans. That's so much more interesting.
But
I like history, but they just make history boring. Mm-hmm, Orleans.
Mm-hmm. To all our listeners in New Orleans, sorry, your city is not dirty. I don't think
it's like dirty in a good way, like kind of dark and like gets like it's gritty. Nighttime. Gritty. Yeah, gritty, that's the word. Yeah, yeah, gritty. It's like okay. In a good way. And also there is a little bit of vomit and piss.
I mean, it's especially on Bourbon Street, I'm sure. All right, let's continue on. My number four favorite game of all time, Natasha kind of called me out that it's going to be higher than what was on her list, and that is Terraforming Mars. I continue to love this game. It is essentially a card game. You're building an engine with those cards to be able to terraform Mars. The artwork is inconsistent. The components in the base game kind of suck, but the gameplay in this is so good. I love being able to have those cards and be able to figure out a strategy based on those cards, building an engine. You're not necessarily going to go through the entire deck, so you're always kind of just forced with interesting decisions. I will always want to play this game, starting off with at least one production in each of the different things that you get, and then with the Prelude expansion. If I have those, this game's perfect, because I think it moves at a much better clip. Like, you often talk about shorter games suck when you start in the beginning and end in the middle. You'd much rather still end at the end. And I think with Prelude and bumping that up, you basically eliminate that first 15% of the game of just a slog of trying to develop any sort of production. At least when you bump with one, you get something. You're getting something.
I think you can bump with one if you don't do Prelude. I didn't like bumping with one and doing Prelude at the same time. It advanced a little too fast for me, and I wasn't able to, because part of the fun is like getting your engine up and then being able to run it and get some. Yep. So it ended a little too quick for me, and I think probably because it was four players, maybe at two it would be fine to do that, or even three. But yeah, I agree. Prelude saved this game 100%.
And it's interesting because Terraforming Mars, the card game, came out, and I think a lot of people migrated towards that over this particular game. I still like this game better. Yeah. We were playing the card game for quite a while, actually. It was coming out as soon as it was released. We played it a ton. And the action selection system is more like Race for the Galaxy, where you get to you pick the action you're doing, and if you pick that action, you get the bigger action, but then everyone else can take the smaller action associated with that. It was good, but I just found myself wanting more, which is what Terraforming Mars is. Same thing with like the dice game. There's Terraforming the Dice game that's coming out or might be out now. That in that game, I don't necessarily care, because I just love Terraforming Mars. We got a chance to play it recently, and I just, this game, it's just so good. It's mm-hmm. I just love being able to put together that engine, Terraforming Mars. It's a cool theme. Yeah, I love this game quite a bit. My number four, Terraforming Mars.
All right, my number three, along with the rest of my list, Bob has already mentioned on today's episode, I'm going with... Now, my number three is The Crew Mission Deep
Space. Ooh.
Yes. I love this game. I love trick-taking games. I grew up playing trick-taking games. I still love them. I pretty much love them all. I'll never turn down a trick-taking game. This one is my absolute favorite. It is so good. I love the cooperative nature of it. And, you know, I don't like very many cooperative games, but this is like hidden information. I love the puzzliness of figuring out what other people have based on what they play, and then being able to deduce and think through this. And I played with my kids a while ago, and they like to just find, and then recently we played it again, and I was teaching them how to play it, and it was really good. Like, they were really enjoying it, and I was kind of explaining, okay, well, we know that, you know, Parker doesn't have the card, because otherwise she would have played it last time. Or we know that, you know, based on the information she shared, she has this, you know, so I'm able to like kind of talk through like this is what we know based on like what they've shared, you know, without like telling them what to play. I kind of lay out like, this is what we know, and teaching them like how to think that way. And I think the deduction in it is what I really like, being able to solve for it. And then my son was done playing it, and my daughter wanted to keep playing. She's like, it plays too. And I was like, I don't want to play. I know I said it was fine, but she's like, please, mom. And so, all right. So we played it at two, and it was really, really fun. I said that before, that I really liked it at two. And I wouldn't say like it's better at two by any means. Like, I would rather play it more players, but it was a great way for me to teach her more strategy of the game. So we played it at two, and you end up having, you take out like seven cards and lay them face down so you don't see them. And then on top of those seven cards, you put seven face up cards. And then who's ever the captain is going to, they're a robot. Is that a robot player? The captain is going to control the robot. So you can see half their deck. And then as you play those cards, you reveal the card underneath it. So like some of the cards are hidden. So obviously like if they don't have any pink, then they will be able to throw off suit. Even though they have a pink, you just can't see it. So it's a little different, but I was able to show her the strategy of the game based on what that third player has and what we can visually see and like the decisions that I was making and teach her a lot. So it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun like teaching them like all the strategy behind the game.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, obviously it was in my top 10. I really enjoy this game. It's you and I often argue about what should have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
And I will still to this day say that my way is the right way. And you'll say your way is the right way. I think over time we've come to a consensus on how to play the game. And I think we agree more now than we used to. But in the beginning, you would yell at me and I'd be like, no, I did it because of this. Well, I didn't know that information or whatever because I can't see your hand. You know, that sort of thing. There's a lot of arguing between. We would bicker in between rounds.
But I think
rounds.
That was like, that's what made the game so fun. Like, I wouldn't call it a bickering. I would call it post-game analysis. Like, what could we have done differently?
And how could Bob
like,
have
how
played
could
better?
We have won this game? Like, what was the right way to play this based on the cards we had? And I love that. Like, we don't have to win every time, but like, damn it, I want to know how we could have won.
Yes. And sometimes you just couldn't. Sometimes it was just the way everything falls. You just, there is no shot at it.
Yeah. And it that's just, fine. You know, luck of the cards, the way that they play out, the way that the objectives play out. It's such a good, solid game. I like Mission Deep Sea better, but I will happily play the space one. And that's fine too.
Yeah.
Either one.
I agree.
Pick this game up. It's a must have. It is so great. It's great for people like who do love trick taking games, and this is a very different spin. When you first play it, you're like, okay, I know how to play trick taking games, it'll be fine. And then you're like, well, wait a minute, this is very different. You know, I don't want to take the tricks. I want this person to get this trick, and it's so good. And it takes a bit to wrap your mind around, but it's so good when you get it and you figure it out. I love it. Third best game of all time. Could easily be my number one. You know, it really could. I think it's such a great game. That is The Crew Mission Deep Sea.
The interesting thing about making this list is the shifting around, because realistically, you could take the top five or top 10 games, and at any point, they could be number one, right?
Oh, yeah.
And part of the interesting thing about making this list is you think about once you start getting into those top games, you start thinking about it in terms of just like overall. Not necessarily in the moment, whereas like for me at least, the lower half of the list, like maybe 40 through 100, it's more about how I feel at the time, not necessarily how I felt overall. So it's weird when you start seeing some of these games that you know are probably gonna be in your top 10, at least for me. But all right, my number three game is a game that will never be on Natasha's list, and that is Spirit Island. It's my favorite cooperative game at this point. It's big. There's a lot going on. It's again, cooperative. You're playing spirits that are trying to get rid of the invaders that are trying to colonize a specific island. So you're helping the indigenous people try to get rid of them. Ultimately, the way you're going to end up winning the game is by generating enough fear to make them leave the island. Once you destroy a certain things in the very beginning, it's really hard. You basically need to eradicate them off the board. But then as you generate more fear eventually gets to the point where you just have to start destroying their cities. And once all their cities are destroyed, they're so fearful that they leave. Super cool theme. I love that there's just so much content. There's so many different spirits you can play. They all like lean into that theme. The names of the spirits are cool. The cards that you get can do different things. They all play very differently, and it's always this like puzzle of trying to figure it out. And one of the things Natasha often talks about is, can you play this game by yourself? And that's what she doesn't like about cooperative style games. So like Pandemic, you know, you can have one person that's basically saying, all right, do this, do this, do this, do that. Mm-hmm. Spirit Island, it's far more difficult. In Spirit Island, it's almost just like, hey, can you do something over there? Yes. Okay, cool. I'm not going to worry about that. I'll take care of stuff over here. And part of it is with that card play, I don't know what you have. You don't know what I have. We both know what, you know, we have, and we're trying to use that to, in order to stop stuff. So it's, you're working cooperatively and you're trying to work through like, hey, how can we stop these different things? And you're making decisions together. But then there's a lot of like, these are the things I can do, and these are the things I'm going to do in order to prevent more invaders, that sort of thing. Ah, such a good game. Such a good game.
It really is a good game. I have a hard time with cooperative games like this, where you're all working together to like complete a mission of some sort. But of all of them, I think this one is really the best. It's got a great theme. It's got some really interesting, more complicated card play, which I think is good. It's kind of a little bit more Euro-y with managing your resources and having these complicated cards. You cannot pay attention to what everybody else is doing. I think it's a very good, solid game. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, it's my favorite cooperative style game. My wife and I play it quite a bit. The thing is, we still play it on like more of the easier levels, because there's a progression that you can do, because now you can get adversaries and you can get scenarios to play. And as you combine them, you can make it really, really difficult. Base game is like level 0. We're playing it at like level 2 most of the time, 2 or 3. And it can go up to like level 9 or 10. So you can make it as hard as you want it or as easy as you want it. It's so good. So much content. And all of it just comes together really well. My third favorite game of all time, Spirit Island.
All right. My number 2.
Oh, I'm suspense. Curious. Hold on a second. So I'm curious, because I know what your top 2 are, right? And I'm just curious if your number 1 game has dropped to number 2. I'm curious of this.
It has dropped.
I knew it. I knew it.
Because I don't play it. Yes. I played it once last year. That is Scythe. It is has been my favorite game of all time. I played it once this year, and against people that don't play it, they're like, yeah, I'll play it because it's your favorite game. And then, of course, I had a lot of fun with it. I did really, really well. I did like better than what I normally do at it. Like, for some reason, it all came together and clicked, and like I just destroyed them, and it wasn't fun. Like it soured the whole thing. And I love this game. I just need to play it like with people that love it as much as I do. I think that would be funner for everybody. It's so good. I really, really like it. I just don't get it played that much. I love the suspense in this game. I love the tension. I love the efficiency puzzle of making sure that you are trying to do that bottom action as much as you possibly can. That is how you play this game. It is so fun. I love that the campaign is really what brought it to the top of my list. I highly recommend that if you like this game a lot. I don't even need any of the expansions. I don't particularly like the airships. I don't like the extra encounters deck. I like the extra factions. That's fine, but I don't need them to play it and enjoy it. I think the best, you get the base game, the map extension is good because it makes it bigger, and I like the Rise of Fenris. And other than that, I think that's all you need. You don't even need that, you know. And of course, the upgraded bits makes it really nice. I love this game, and I should try to play it this year a little bit more.
And the thing is, I would love to play it too, because it used to be my number 2, and it's dropped. And again, like you said, we just don't get it played. I do have a couple friends who are cool with playing it because they just enjoy the artwork and the experience. They don't care if they lose or not. But playing it, you know, bringing it to game night, most people just kind of shy away from it, which, man, I really wish we could play this more. You know, I think last year this was our combined favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
You know, your 1 and my 2. But unfortunately, you gotta get games played.
Yeah, otherwise they fall, which is fine. That happens over time. It doesn't mean it's less of a game. It doesn't take away its game. It's just that's how time works. My yep. number two best game of all time is Scythe.
Such a good game. I still love playing that game. All right, my number two favorite game of all time is a two-player only game, and that is Star Wars Rebellion. Technically, you can play it at four. Don't. Play it at two. This is Star Wars in a box. So basically, you're playing, you know, movies 4, 5, and 6, and then if you get the expansion, you're playing with Rogue One characters. And that's what you're doing. You're one person's the Galactic Empire, one's, you know, the Rebels, and as the Galactic Empire, your objective is to find the Rebel base and destroy it. If you do that, you win. The Rebels are just trying to hold out as long as they possibly can. Eventually, a round marker and an influence marker are going to meet, and when that happens, the Rebels win. You know, they're trying to accomplish objectives to move that one marker closer to the round marker, while the Empire's job is to completely just find the base and destroy it. Our buddy Chris and I play this game a ton. Whenever we get a chance to. I say a ton, but it's a long game. You know, you're talking 3+ hours. And I love it. I love Star Wars. I love how thematic this game can be. I love some of the decisions that you make. You know, and each faction plays really differently. And there's just so unique in both of them. I don't know which one I like better. And it just, yeah, it's such a good, solid game. And if you like Star Wars, I mean, this game is just a no-brainer. If you can get a friend to play it with you, especially if you have two newer people start playing this together, I think, and you guys can grow with the game, so good. My number two favorite game of all time, Star Wars Rebellion.
Sounds like a really great game for you.
It is. I love that for you. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. I have no comments on that game.
Yeah, well, you're never going to play it, and that's fine. Yeah,
I don't need
that's
to.
That's fine. Nope.
All right. My number one game of all time, no surprise here. That is the best game, the best series, by the best designers. And this is my favorite of all of their games. And there's just more now. That is Paladins of the West Kingdom. I love this game so much. And we've played it a ton this year. And that's really why it's my number one, because I played it so much. I love it so much. I typically win it, which is why I think I like it, because I don't know. It just clicks for me, and I just love doing well at this game. It has a lot of things that I don't like in a game, which is actions and rules that are not intuitive. You forget a lot, so it's helped that I played this so much, which is why I'm willing to forgive all that. Like, I don't like rules where you have to remember that you need to have this number in order to do this action, you know. And so that took me a little learning curve to remember all of that stuff, but now it's more intuitive to me, so it's fine. But there's a lot you can do. So this is kind of like a worker placement, but you've got your own board, so you're not competing with other people. But you are competing with the cards that are available, because they don't refresh at the end of your turn. So it does still feel very much like a worker placement game. And you are essentially needing to drive up these markers in order to do these actions, but you need to do these actions in order to drive up these markers. And so you need to kind of figure out a nice engine of the three things that you're going to be doing. And you kind of determine that based on the objectives of the game. And it all comes together so, so well. It's heavier of the West Kingdom games. I think it's the heaviest of them, but it's just really good. It's my favorite game. I can't even really articulate why. I'm sorry.
It just the way everything's interconnected, it's such a cool puzzle. It's a puzzle because you're taking these actions to bump up these other things so you can take these additional actions. There's three cards that will come out in the beginning part of the game, which are end game objectives. I like that. The first one you have the most information on, but it's worth the least amount of points. By round three, you get the last one, which is worth the most amount of points. But if you haven't started doing it, then you have to get on top of it in order to score those points.
Yep.
So it's so good. It's so good the way it comes together.
You kind of, there's six different big things that you need to do. And two of them will give you red, will move you up the red track. Two of them will move you up the blue, and two of them will move you up the black. But each of them also require one of the other two. So the two that move you up the black, one of them requires red, one of them requires blue. So they all work together in tandem. So you need to be able to do them all to move them all the tracks up. So then you can continue moving, doing the other ones that will let you continue moving the other ones up. And you basing what you're going to do, it needs to differ based on the objectives of the game. You can't just be like, well, I really like to fortify. I'm going to fortify every game. Well, you can if it helps you with the objectives. You know what I mean? But if you're not trying to get those that level, or if you already have a ton of red, maybe you don't want to work on that. And you do want to kind of focus, though, because you do get points if you focus heavier on one than you do like doing a little bit of everything. So it's just a really good Euro game with you're just really focusing on trying to get the most points, but it's really, really good.
Yeah. There's a lot of little things going on in the game, and you will forget certain things. The last time we just played, I was just like, man, I had this card that every time I did this thing, I should get a worker. And I didn't necessarily ignore it, but it was one of those things that I forgot about. And at some point you're just like, oh man, like I could have had these workers. I don't know if it would have changed the outcome. Maybe it doesn't, because it was one of the super generic workers that sometimes you can use, sometimes you can't. Yeah, just such a good game. We played it recently, and yeah, the way it makes me think, the puzzle behind it, how everything is interconnected. Yeah, love it.
Best game of all time, that is Paladins of the West Kingdom.
I disagree with you, because I think the best game of all time is my number one, and that is Great Western Trail. You knew it was going to be on there. You knew I loved him. It's mm-hmm. my favorite still. I still love this game. I've still had opportunities to play it with people. People still are willing to play this base game. And yeah, it's a rondel. You're herding cattle. You're basically, you know, getting them to Kansas City and then shipping them. And there's such a cool timing mechanism, because you can stop at every building and do actions, but you're just not going to deliver enough cattle. You can do that if you want, but it slows you down because a lot of people are going to start skipping buildings. So there's this push and pull of when do I need to push it in order to, you know, make sure I'm delivering my cattle, and when do I scale back a second and just take some additional actions on this? There's always this push and pull, you know, and that's what I love about, you know, rondel systems is how far do I go? When do I say, all right, I can skip all these things in order. So I need to make sure I do this. Shipping your cattle is the game timer. So eventually you're going to be, as you're shipping cattle, it's going to progress the game forward. So you're only going to be able to do it so many times. And you want to do that in order to get money. In the beginning, money is in a really, really tight economy. You know, you're trying to balance that with, you know, getting additional different types of workers so you can make different actions more powerful. It just, yes, it's such a crunchy, cool game that there's different ways you can score points. I've tried a variety of ways to score points. Some things have worked for me, other things haven't worked for me. I love this game so much. It's such a good game. And I love Rails to the North expansion, because it basically makes you build a network. So now you're taking actions to build a network to deliver to additional places. So now you can deliver it to San Francisco, you can deliver it to Denver. It just so good. Chef's kiss. Mwah. Such a good game. I love it.
I would love to learn to love this game, but I just can't play it with you. I want to be able to play this game with you because you enjoy it so much, but when I'm playing with you, I just get so destroyed. Like, destroyed. Destroyed. I feel like an idiot playing this game with you. I think if I could play with other people, get good enough at it, like, I don't need to win. Like, I just need to not feel like a dumb playing it with you.
Not feel like a dumb. I don't know. It just, that's the thing. I've played it online with like Chris and Jeremy, and they've beat me. So I'm not like fantastic at the game. Although that's the thing. What I love about this game now is it's gotten to the point where I try different things. You know, I'm always trying to see if I can win this way? Can I win that way? I'm going to try to focus on this thing. I'm going to try to focus on that thing. So it gives me this chance to just focus on different things, which I really, really like. Such a cool game. It just, yeah, unfortunately, Natasha won't play it.
I'll play them's the New Zealand one because you know, I'm sure you're really good at that one just as much, but at least it'll be newer.
I've only played it a few times, so I haven't played it a ton to really, you know, sink my teeth into it like Great Western Trail.
Yeah.
I still love that game. Yeah, such a good game.
Well, if you really like that game as well, play it with Mob, because he'd be a fun person to play it with.
Oh, yeah. It'd be great.
Expert.
Yeah, I would love it. Let's play it. Great Western Trail. I'll get smoked.
Thanks, everyone, to listening to all of our shenanigans. We really enjoyed doing this for you. We've had a lot of fun talking about board games. Let us know what you think. We'd be happy to hear from you. We're thinking about other ways that we can make this a little bit more sustainable for us, so it's not quite as much work, as a little bit, can fit it into our day-to-day without it being so difficult, right, to maintain it. That's kind of what we're thinking about, trying to think if there's a way to do this podcast still without taking too much of our time away from our lives and whatnot. So let us know what you think. If you've been a fan, we really appreciate hearing from you. We've enjoyed talking to everybody. Thanks again, everyone, for listening.
It's been an awesome experience. We've made some really good friends. It's been a really cool learning how to do this and interacting with people. So yeah, like Natasha said, reach out to us, definitely email us, keep in contact. Like I said, right now we're leaving it as it's a break. We're not saying it's done, but we're also not necessarily giving any sort of time frame of when we might come back. I think it's one of those things that we'll just, when the time's right, we'll know. I want to thank everyone for reaching out. I want to thank everyone for the positive feedback. Even some of the negative feedback we took to heart. And, it was one of those things that we evaluated what, some of the negative things were that people said. But overall, fantastic. Thank you guys so much. It's been great doing this, and it's been great meeting everyone.